And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standig Rumalee podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standig. I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. It is Tuesday morning here in the DMV. And for you guys, it may not feel this way, but I'm going to call this essentially a bonus episode of the podcast this week. I had a plan that I was going to go with this week. Started on Monday with our conversation with analytics insider Ben Baldwin about various Commanders topics, and got a couple other things lined up. But as many of you know, on Mondays, I typically go on, well, not typically, I always go on the radio with Kevin Sheehan over at the Team 980. But Monday being a holiday, Kevin was not doing the radio show, and he informed me of that on Monday. And I was like, well, since, you know, I got to get my fix of Kevin, why don't you come on my podcast? So we did, and we spoke yesterday at some length, kind of all over the place, not purely a Commanders podcast, more of a general conversation about the state of sports. Was off the heels of the NBA All-Star game, why that is no longer working, and in the context of, you know, kind of where we are with certain aspects of fandom and sports, and what are some of the issues. And we also got into, of course, various Commanders topics, with regards to, you know, everything that's happened over the last couple of weeks, free agency to come up. That's all towards the end of, or towards the back half of the conversation. So look, it's always fun listening to Kevin Sheehan. So I'm sure you guys will enjoy this conversation with him. We'll get to it in a moment here on the podcast. You can find Standig Rumalee podcast, you know, where, iTunes or anywhere you do your podcasting. Hit that subscribe button. Hit the like button if you have a moment to leave a nice comment and a rating, a positive rating. That is awesome as well. Meanwhile, of course, make sure you check out The Athletic. I'm basically kind of starting, I guess, a series here on what are some of the options at number two. The first one up will be looking at Drake May and Jaden Daniels, but this is not a football deep dive. This is getting to talk to people who played with them, coached them, know them, and get a feel for, you know, a little bit about what made them tick, what makes them such an interesting prospect. That should be up on Wednesday, and then I will follow up with other angles about the Commanders at number two in the coming days. So make sure you check that out as well. I don't want to really linger here too much on in the intro. I will say I forgot to mention the other day, but, you know, there's been this talk about how did Cliff Kingsbury end up with the Commanders after it seemed like he was going to the Raiders. Antonio Pierce, the Raiders' new head coach, I'm blanking on which podcast it was. Was it the one with Ryan Clark? Ooh, I should know this. But in any event, you can find it online. But he basically said, as was discussed, that Magic Johnson is persuasive, I guess you could say, and got involved, and that led in part to Kingsbury coming. I would just say that that may be true to an extent, but ultimately I'm sure the Commanders were offering just better terms of their deal than the Raiders. Interestingly enough, we talk about how the Cliff Kingsbury relationship with Caleb Williams, having spent the year together at USC, you know, what does that mean for Washington? Well, interestingly, the Raiders, who I believe have the 8th pick, they just hired a new QB coach who has been Caleb Williams's personal QB coach this offseason. So another interesting wrinkle there, should any of that matter. That would presumably be more about making that Godfather offer to the Bears, obviously, than anything with Washington. But the Raiders clearly needed a quarterback. We'll see. I'm assuming Caleb Williams stays at one, but just another interesting wrinkle. If we're going to pay attention to Kingsbury's connection to Williams, we need to focus on other ones as well. Washington, I will say, they also did one more thing today with their staff. They announced the hiring of a new assistant special teams coach, his name, John Glenn. Blast off with your jokes there if you would like. He was the linebackers coach with Seattle, had been there for several years in different roles and going back to when Dan Quinn was there as DC. So presumably that's where that relationship comes from. My point of bringing this up is not to get you hyped for the assistant special teams coach. It's to say that in the press release about the hire, it was announced that Washington has officially finalized their coaching staff. So that presumably is going to be it. And, you know, no more wondering if there's going to be anybody else coming on board, we would imagine. So take that for what it's worth. I still was wondering if they would add another running backs coach, considering Anthony Lynn has the running game coordinator title. But and also, you know, because of his status as having been an OC and a head coach, I didn't know if running back coach was a little bit too low for him. But, you know, it's all, I guess, in conjunction with one another, being the RB coach as well as that. But, you know, and I'm sure they will have other people on staff to help when needed. All right, so let's get to this. We'll jump in. My conversation with Kevin Sheehan, of course, host of the Team 980 from 10 to 1 Monday to Friday, and he delivers the great Kevin Sheehan podcast all the time. Always enjoy listening to that and appreciate when he has me on there as well. So here we go, my conversation with Kevin Sheehan here on the Standard Room Only podcast. All right, so I'm talking to you guys on Monday morning, and I find out earlier this morning that my usual Monday hit on the Kevin Sheehan radio show wasn't going to happen because apparently it's a holiday. I don't ever pay attention to what holidays are anymore because I don't get any, or I get them, but I don't use them. Anyway, so when I found this out, I was like, hey, well, why don't we do a reverse? So here we are. Kevin Sheehan is on with me today. This is impromptu. We're going to figure this out. What we're going to discuss. You know what, Kevin, I wanted to discuss, though? Now that I'm out of this Commander's cocoon, I can, like, pay attention to, like, other things. Like, not like I wasn't watching TV or sports before, but, like, I can do it, like, in a more casual way. Like, this weekend, I just watched the PGA Tour, and I watched some of the NBA All-Star Weekend, and did you watch Night Country?
No, what's up?
HBO, it's the new True Detective series on HBO. Oh,
I with Jodie Foster.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've not watched any of it yet.
Are you going to?
It's on my list, but I am knee-deep into Fargo right now.
Oh, okay.
The TV series, and I'm, like, at the beginning, I'm on season three. Anybody that's a Fargo fan, I'd never watched it before. Everybody, all of my friends had said, this is must watch. It is awesome. It's so good.
It's funny. I've been meaning to. I know that each season of Fargo is not, there's no connection. It's sort of like True Detective, essentially, in that regard. But, like, so is season three the best season? Or are you going in order?
Season one and season two are incredible. Season three so far through three episodes is really, really good too. It's all excellent. Right.
I actually just canceled Hulu. Because I have too many subscriptions, but I have it through, I think, the end of the month. And Fargo was one of the things I was like, okay, maybe I need to binge some of this really quickly before I get going.
So Tommy tells me, I think Tommy's told me this. I don't always listen to what Tom tells me. He told me that season four with Chris Rock on it is really good. But the first season, anybody that's watched Fargo, with Billy Bob Thornton and with Martin Freeman, who was, you know, in the original Office, actually, the BBC version of The Office, I think it's one of the best things I've ever seen Billy Bob Thornton do. And that's saying a lot. He was so good in this. And then season two had Kirsten Dunst. She was great. She was so good. Ted Danson was good. Todd from Breaking Bad. What's his name in real life again? He was excellent.
Yeah.
And then this season three has Owen McGregor, and that she's a smoke show. She plays this parolee. She's really good. Mary Winstead. Oh, Mary.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's really good.
Jesse Plemons was Todd in Breaking Bad.
Yeah, in Breaking Bad. Yeah.
He's actually married to Kirsten Dunst, I believe.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, keep it in the family.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's on my list. I need to talk to more people about Night Country. I'll just say that I kept waiting for something to happen that just didn't for me, and I feel like it's an incredibly polarizing show. Jodie Foster is really good, and if you like sort of that dark True Detective vibe, it gives you that with a little supernatural deal in this one. But I don't know.
I've turned it on. I mean, it's not over yet, right?
It just ended last night. It was only six episodes.
It ended last night. So how many episodes?
Six.
Six episodes. Yeah, I flipped it on a couple times. I'm like, I don't want to. I got to go back and watch it from the beginning. I mean, to me, True Detective season one was just, you know, all time great.
True Detective is such a weird show in that the first season was really good, in part because, like, to see McConaughey on a television show with Woody Harrelson and like, that was fascinating, and obviously that was a huge year for McConaughey's career. But, you know, the ending was kind of, I don't know, didn't do a ton for me. And then season two was terrible. I liked season three, but, like, it's a weird, it's like, it's almost like I get drawn in by the tease, by the perception, by what I think is going to happen, and then it doesn't quite ever deliver. And I'm somebody that watched Lost the whole time and loved it, but the ending was a little.
What endings of great series did you love?
Well, I mean, does like Newhart count?
No, I'm talking about, you know.
Yeah,
things that people have binged in recent years.
I mean, I thought Breaking Bad was excellent.
Excellent.
I thought Better Call Saul was really good. I thought all those were good. Like The Sopranos was fine, but I know that the fade to black was, or cut to black was, jarring and odd. But in general, like that, I was generally okay with it. Other than that. I think it's when you wind up these big mysteries, and then what's the payoff? If it's just a drama, like life goes on, but if it's a big mystery, you better be delivering me something.
Yeah.
And I just didn't feel like this.
I think you're probably right that it seems like, just of the shows that I have really been into, and I would call my favorite shows of all time, I think the endings have been very controversial. Certainly The Sopranos, certainly Game of Thrones, which I was actually very sort of in opposite. I thought Game of Thrones, the final season, was much better than most Game of Thrones fans thought it was. Breaking Bad's the one that totally delivered for me right through the end.
To me, that's my favorite drama of all time, or however you want to classify it.
Yeah, for me, it would be, it's like 1 and 1A, but I'm not even sure which is 1 and 1A with Game of Thrones. Those would be the two for me. The Sopranos is all-time great, but I actually would probably put that a little bit below those two. But in terms of dramas, yeah, yeah. You and I both love certain comedy series that have, you know.
I pretend The Office stopped after Steve Carell left. That the final few seasons were just terrible. I can't even watch them.
The Robert California season's incredibly underrated.
Ugh.
James Spader was great on that show. Thought he was.
You might be. It's like whenever, like, if I'm flipping through the channels, which I know nobody under 20 or 20 or 30 does anymore, but if I'm flipping through the channels, I see like an Office rerun, I will, all right, let me see which one this is. And if it's anything above, I don't know what that is, season 7 or 8, it's an automatic. I might even block it. It's like an automatic pass.
I think you should revisit season 8 because Spader's really good. But you're right. It kind of slowed in the final year for sure.
But yeah. Anyway, so like I you know, getting to watch some of these things, has been, I mean, again, not that I'm saying I was like not watching stuff, but like to do it in like a little more relaxed way is good, including sports. And you know, I don't want to follow what's going to be, I'm sure, on every First Take radio show, whatever, today about the NBA All-Star weekend. I did watch Saturday. Did you watch any of it?
I watched the highlights of Mac McClung. I mean, dude is just a sick athlete. I mean, he really is a sick athlete. He's really creative. I haven't watched All-Star Saturday night, like start to finish, or even significant parts of it in years. I watched the Ionescu Steph Curry thing.
Yeah.
Highlight on highlights. That was great. But I didn't really know. I actually ended up watching. I had no intention of watching the game last night. My son's like, let's just turn it on at the beginning. And then it, when Dame Lillard pulled up from half court and knocked down the first of half court shots, apparently he had two half court shots. And then the score was, I was like, has anybody ever scored 200? I said that in the first quarter. I'm like, this is the intrigue for me. I didn't stick with it exclusively, but I don't know. If anybody's expecting a competition in any of these All-Star games now, like that's so, you know, 25 years ago, like it's an exhibition of skill and athleticism. It's not an actual competition. And they're never, that horse has left the barn. They're never going to get these players to actually compete in these games.
So I went back and looked this up last night. I didn't watch any of the game, partly because I figured what was going to happen was going to happen. Not the 200 points, but just that it would be, you know, negative defense. I did watch most of the Saturday just because I was home and it was on, and you know, but you know, generally fun. The dunk contest is embarrassing because nobody, you know, nobody's even really bothered to participate. As much as people were rooting against sort of Jaylen Brown, feeling he was getting like some his scores were getting goosed, at least he showed up. I'll give him that. Unlike everybody else who was,
well,
like
Mac McClung's not even in the NBA, right?
Yeah, no, neither is Toppin's brother.
Yeah.
So, and I think there is some, I think there is a tie there between the dunk contest and the All-Star game. And that is, these guys are afraid to get embarrassed. They are afraid to become a meme. They're afraid to become the social media punchline for the day, the week, what have you. And they won't engage in ways that this was, obviously there was no social media back in the, you know, the Bird, Magic, Jordan, you know, even in the early, you know, early Kobe stuff, that none of these things were a deal. But I looked it up, like even like with Kobe still playing, so it wasn't that long ago, the scores were not outrageous. The scores were actually somewhat in line with what we see today in real NBA games. It's been the last like 6 or 7 years where the scores have just escalated to ridiculous degrees. And I think that these things, here's my hot take. I think these things are connected, meaning the dunk contest and the All-Star game, because of what I just said. And there's a lot of factors, but I'm going to throw out a hot take factor. I think in both cases, I think LeBron is to blame. I think LeBron, his entire career since he did the decision, has been about being essentially afraid to go it alone. He joins the Heat and then he goes to the Cavs in ways like, I get it. We now see all the time it's happening. You know, since then it happens all the time. These super teams joining, but he did it, and we all, you know, went off to relitigate the decision. But it was about feeling like he couldn't go it alone. And I don't mean competitively. I mean like emotionally, spiritually. He kept doing that over and over again, and he's done that since. And then he was the one in the dunk contest. You know, he's never done one. You know, he was supposed to do it in 2010. He said he was, and he bailed or something. You know, you can go look on the YouTube right now. Jordan's all over the place on the dunk contest and Dominique. And, you know, that wasn't a Bird Magic thing. I think that LeBron has, and it's probably unfair, of course, to completely throw it on one person, but he is the king of the league. He is the bridge from the old school to the now. Like, I don't blame Anthony Edwards per se, because he's following what the people before him did. The people before him were like basically LeBron James. And I think that something about his attitude has really, whether it was intentional or not, the message has been received. Don't put yourself out there to get embarrassed. And I think that this is the problem, and I don't know how they fix it.
How embarrassed can you really get in an All-Star game, though?
Well, if somebody goes up and dunks on you,
the dunk contest and the 3-point shooting. I mean, I agree with you on LeBron's kind of, you know, positioning himself over and over again to, although, you know, I say that, and there he was in Cleveland with, you know, the likes of, you know, Dellavedova and, you know, that team. I still think one of the greatest LeBron seasons was the season where they lost to the Warriors in six, the first year that they played the Warriors in six. And it was truly a one-person team.
He had Kyrie, he had Kevin Love. These guys were, you know, Olympians and all-stars and all.
No, they got hurt in that series. They got
I'm
talking about the performance specifically in the finals.
I got you. With
Timothy Mozgov and Dellavedova and James Jones and, you know, whoever else was on that team.
LeBron has been the type of player that can raise the level of the sort of normal guys because of the way his passing. You know, obviously you can have a lot of confidence, I would think, playing with LeBron James. So yeah, I you know, no knocking the talent for sure.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do with it, but you know what? Honestly, they don't need to do anything with it. If you don't want to watch, don't watch. They want to take this break in the middle of the season anyway, or as you approach, you know, the final 30 or so games of the season. What's the big deal if people hate it and don't watch it? I mean, we haven't had a real all-star game in 10 years. You're saying back to Kobe that they actually competed. I mean, I pulled up the scores as if that's, you know, somewhat of an indication. 2008 was 134-128. I mean, that's actually a reasonable all-star game. 2005 was 125-115. So you're talking about, you know, 240 points versus the nearly 400 points scored last night. That's crazy. Last night's game. I'm glad it's back to a basketball game, East versus West versus those end of quarters and start over. It was too confusing, but I'm not a big audience for this anymore anyway. Although I will tell you that I do remember the Iceman winning the MVP. I'm pretty sure he won the MVP at the Capitol Center's All-Star game in 19. I got to look this up. Was it 82? 1980 Capitol Center. We've had the All-Star game twice, right? The Capitol Center in 1980 and the MCI Center was like 2002.
Yeah. Well, you know what? One of the greatest moments in civilization happened when they came back, when they played the 2001 game?
Yeah, 2001.
One of the greatest moments in civilization was when Mariah Carey went out in the Michael Jordan jersey, but made it into a dress, and she sings her song, you know, Hero, and he starts to well up. You want to tell me who's a hotter woman at any point than that? Go ahead. And then that she's doing it in a Wizards jersey is absolutely hilarious and so amazing that it ranks as one of the all-time great moments.
Do you know
in history.
Who won the MVP of that All-Star game, MCI Center 2001?
Ooh, I don't remember off the top of my head now. Who?
Allen Iverson.
Oh, well, that's a perfect.
And just so you know, he had 25 points. Like, that was it. Last night, you had a 50-point score on the losing team.
Right. Did you see how many shots Karl Anthony Towns took to get the 50?
It was like, was it 35?
35 shots.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, obviously it's a sucker game.
I just looked at the box score
of that game. I don't know what happened. So I don't, maybe everybody else like went away and they just said, here, go shoot. But that was insane. But to go back to the game itself, I'm with you. Like, I tweeted out last night, it's not for me. If the kids like it, then really that's what they're catering to. But my colleague, David Aldridge, this is what he tweeted last night. That was dreadful again. I am beginning to think this game is irredeemable. I'm not sure why even minimal defense effort is beyond this generation of all-stars, but it may be time to end this game if they can't give more of a damn than that. And your guy, Scott Van Pelt, I don't have it in front of me, but he basically tweeted, if you don't care, neither do we. And I agree with all that, but I also think this is part of, like, the NBA has some bigger struggles right now. I am, I don't know if you ever listen to Bill Simmons?
No.
Okay, so he had this guy, you know who Derek Thompson is?
I mean, I listen to my guy Joe House, but I don't listen to Bill.
Yeah. I don't know if you know who Derek Thompson is. He's a writer for The Atlantic. He's actually from D.C., and he has a podcast on Bill Simmons's Ringer Network. Anyway, Simmons had him on this week, and they were discussing. He's like a guy who's like really big into like what's coming down the road in the future for all these different topics, science and social media, whatever. And when he got to sports, he discussed how basically for him, he realizes he consumes a ton of podcasts about the NBA and watches almost nothing of the sport until they get into the playoffs. And that's pretty much kind of where I am at this moment. And I think the NBA has a real problem. If somehow like this was the TV show, The Leftovers, and the 2% of the population that got zapped up included Steph Curry, LeBron, and Durant, I don't know that anybody would even, I don't know, there would be much ratings at all. Because you can tell me all you want about the skill of all this younger generation. They are not compelling even remotely in the same way. Whether that's that we don't have much of an origin story with them because nobody plays college anymore, or at least not more than a year. Or it's the AAU effect where they come in with sort of, you know, it's not the way, you know, it's not the fundamental basketball that we want. It's just purely explosive stuff, and there's none of the team kind of vibes or their personalities. They've already become so famous at a young age that they no longer feel that they need to, that they've already kind of made it. This is what I think would happen with Chase Young to a degree. But the NBA, I do think, is in legit trouble. Plus the fact that so many of the main players, or the best players, I should say, are all international, which is not a knock. It's to say they're not American, and that's going to detract from the audience to some degree, no matter what anybody wants to admit it or not. I just think this, to me, this weekend was sort of emblematic of where the NBA is struggling right now. And I don't know what they do about it, but I do think it's a legit problem.
Well, I mean, the guy that you mentioned saying he consumes all of these podcasts but doesn't watch games until the playoffs. I mean, people have been saying now for years, me included, the best part of the NBA during the regular season is the TNT pregame, halftime, and postgame show. You know, to watch Ernie, Kenny, Shaq, and Barkley, that's an entertaining show about the NBA. But it's like when the game comes on, it's like you want more of them. I have found myself for many years not really a consumer of the NBA's regular season, but I've always been a big fan of the NBA and the NBA playoffs, which I think is still a great product. And it's a completely different game. And the same way, by the way, I think hockey fans might admit that the NHL playoffs, it's like a completely different product and a different sport in the way it's played too. But God, man, in the last year or two, I've watched more NBA regular season than I have even college basketball season. And for me, that's a big, big difference from my consumer sort of habits in the past. And the reason is simple. It's just like, it's like a varsity, you know, level talent and game versus not freshman or JV. It's like versus seventh grade. I mean, the college game and the quality of the college game is so awful. And
oh, terrible.
NIL and transfer portal are making it even worse and even harder to follow. I wonder whether or not the percentage of international players in the NBA have any effect on whether or not people watch it. It doesn't with me at all. But it's not, the games are still just much different, but God, man, I don't think the shot making and the shooting and the passing, I don't think we've ever seen the game played at a higher level from that standpoint.
I wouldn't argue with that.
You don't really know for sure what it means until they start playing to win and they play hard and everybody's playing and available for as many minutes as it takes. And you don't get that until the postseason. But last night means nothing to me. I'm sure it's a big conversation centerpiece today, but it's like, don't watch it then. It's not a game. It's not a competition. It's an exhibition. And if you view it from that sense, who cares? And by the way, I think you mentioned the LeBron effect and others. I think load management has a lot to do with what we've seen in these games. Nobody wants to exert themselves and get themselves hurt in this kind of a game. And they don't. I mean, there's literally no defense. It is a take it off the rim or take it out of the net. And then, you know, what are we going to do that's going to entertain people the most on offense? Is it going to be a three from half court? Is it going to be, you know, a lob towards the rim for a, you know, a reverse dunk? Who knows?
But no, anyway. No, for sure. I mean, look, you at a very base, I agree with you on the skill set. I mean, like, let's even in the 3-point shooting contests,
that's sick.
Everybody was making, like, the worst person would have probably advanced to the finals or semifinals in other years, or close enough, right? You know, it is the skill set is, I mean, it's not, and it's also, they're not just shooting threes, they're shooting it from like 5 to 10 feet behind the line.
Well, that's what's changed the game. That's where, you know, I've talked about this for years, is that Steph Curry actually changed the game. It wasn't the increase in 3-point attempts. It was the distance in which he started to shoot them without any coach pushing back that changed the geometry of the floor. You now had to guard out to 30, 35 feet, and then other players like Lillard and others, and it's changed. It's made the game so much harder to defend because you got to defend more space. And that's when, like, when I hear, you know, like my good friend Tommy, who will say, you know, the game's much worse. The game's, whether it's worse or better is subjective. The game is definitely different. That's not subjective. It's played completely differently because you get three for a 3-point shot, but now you have players that have extended the floor so much that's created so much more space behind it or in front of it. And it's just so much harder to defend. I think if they want to get, I think the thing that would change the game back to something that you'd see 125 to 121 more normally than you see 145 to 141 is the hand check rule. Because once they did away with that in 2005 or whatever year that was, it created a more free-flowing game. And then what came around at the same time was the emphasis on the three, and then Curry stretched it out to where you literally had to pick him up once he crossed the timeline. And right. The same with Clay, and the same with so many other players. It is amazing that a jump shot is taken from 42 feet, whereas 15, 20 years ago, that was just a heave of a shot. It was a chuck. Yeah. Like, we're chucking it towards the rim at the end of the quarter.
So you now would be benched.
The normal flow of a fast break or offense, and you get guys that rise up and shoot a normal jump shot. So there is strength, there's skill, but there's a strength related to that that's much different than, you know, you used to get too. Everybody said, well, Maravich would have had that. Or, you know, the one guy from way back in the day, I think Isaiah would have had that kind of range. A guy like Mark Price would have had that kind of range. You know,
Chris
Reggie,
Jackson.
I'm sorry?
Chris Jackson, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf.
Chris Jackson. You know, obviously, you know, guys like Reggie Miller and Larry Bird as well. But yeah.
And also, like, you know, because not to get into Kenny Smith territory here, he was absolutely off the rocker with his commentary all night. But, you know, the Sabrina Ionescu going against Curry, she shot from the NBA line. And, you know, I know some people who were like, oh, I hope they don't, she doesn't get embarrassed shooting from there. I'm like, are you serious? Like, they shoot from back there. Caitlin Clark is shooting from the logos.
Yeah, she's
like,
changed. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, this is not your...
What did Kenny Smith... Why did you... You just took a shot at Kenny Smith. What did he say?
Oh, you clearly haven't listened to... Or you didn't watch social media or listen to anything today. He was... I don't know what was wrong with him last night. He said a bunch of things that were insane, but the one that got the most attention was when it ended, when the Curry... He and Reggie Miller are having weird back and forth as they were both on the broadcast, not the pre and post. He was saying that she should have shot from the WNBA line, even though she took Steph Curry to the buzzer. Steph needed to make his last like few shots to win. And
right.
It became this whole thing about like, why are you sort of, you know, pissing on this moment where she did really well? It was a fun competition. Independent. I mean, she
what
scored
was
as many
reasoning for her shooting from the WNBA line.
Just because that's where she shoots from. And then then Reggie made some comment, like, what do you want to do? Go play with dolls. Like, it became this, it just kind of went off the rails. And basically people were like crapping on Kenny because he sort of like ruined the moment. He again, it wasn't for me, it was that, but he said, a bunch of other completely random things that made no sense. I don't know what was going on with him last night. All right, as a you know, you're always good about knowing your audience and like staying on topic. I just went 20 minutes here talking about NBA on a Commanders podcast. I'm sure I'll get yelled at for that, but you're here. People like to hear from you. But that's one thing about the NFL, though, right? The pure nature of the NFL doesn't allow for the stuff that we are talking about, because if you are unwilling to compete, you are going to get your head knocked off. If you're going to, you know, whatever position you're playing, you are about to get into a car wreck multiple times a game, if not every play. If you're like a lineman, you have got to stay focused. And I think that's like, you know, we're here, we're heading into free agency. It's going to be fascinating to see what Chase Young gets from anybody. But like, you know, I thought that was one of the, like, to me, he had more of like an NBA mentality, in that he seemed to think he had made it, but didn't always put forth the effort to not just on the field, but off the field too, to improve, to get better. Because I think in the NFL, obviously, as we know, it's much more of an anonymous player league. Only the quarterbacks and a handful of other guys really break through, you know, from a popular culture perspective. But Chase is one of those guys to a degree, at least. And but he did it without, based on nothing he did in the pros. But in the but the larger point with the NFL is, you know, you've got to show up. Like, you can't, if you are, you know, half-assing it, you know, as an individual player, you know, you're going to get not just benched, you're just going to get hurt. And that's why I don't think it's just not, you're not going to say, I mean, you can't do the Pro Bowl anymore, because that is too dangerous. I agree with that. But in terms of the game, you just don't see that mentality the way you do, I think.
Well, I mean, there are two massive differences between the NFL and the NBA. The biggest being 82 games versus 16. Every game or 17, every game matters. And then you've got these massive, much larger, fully guaranteed contracts versus, for the most part, for most players, smaller and less guaranteed. But I think just the nature of, you know, the baseball, hockey, and the NBA that play all of these games, and by nature of that, a lot of these games just don't really carry the weight, whereas every one of the 17 is so big, and it's this rhythm that you get into of once a week and Sundays and Mondays, and it's just big. I remember years ago suggesting, I think I was doing the show with Riggo. He loved this idea. I go, maybe what the NBA should do is they should basically go to like a 30-game regular season schedule. And then I go, I understand that you'd lose so much revenue from the 52 games not being played, but maybe you'd increase your audience size on television, because these games would be so meaningful that you could make it up that way. And then you get to the postseason and you go not best of seven, but you go best two out of three. And like, it would increase the intensity and the drama of each game. They're never going to do that, obviously, because there's so much revenue at stake with all of these other games, and there's no guarantee. I mean, college basketball, because it had fewer games, and the games during the regular season for years meant so much more, I think benefited from that. But look, the NFL masks everything now. It doesn't matter what else is going on, because essentially from September through the NFL draft, the NFL owns the spotlight.
Well, that's what's and this was also part of what I was saying before about how getting out of my NFL cocoon allowed me to sort of get back to sort of normalcy. And this weekend it felt like that. I watched, as I said, a bunch of the PGA event out in LA. That's, I did watch NBA
to watch, yeah.
Yeah, I watched NBA All-Star Weekend to some degree. You know, obviously there's no baseball right now. There's no NFL, but you know, I got to watch some other stuff. I didn't really watch college basketball because, you know, whatever. But although I did see that Adam Peters and Dan Quinn were at the Georgetown Villanova game the other night. That was about the.
They went to the Georgetown Villanova game.
Yeah, well, I think from what I gather, I think Ed Cooley was Georgetown kind of reached out to say, "Hey, you know, welcome to town if you guys want to come to a game." So they did, and they talked to Cooley before the game, things like that. But it is that's the way it used to be. You know, when we were younger men, like every sport had its season, even things like that. We don't even like the LPGA tour. I know it exists, but it gets zero attention for me. Same thing with NASCAR, though. I think that's probably more of a me thing. Like these things used to be much more, it was a more flat landscape. And now it is just the NFL pushing it. It just pushing everything out. And I think it is a lot because of what you just said. It's one game a week. That is compelling. And, you know, it's become the Super Bowl is obviously some borderline national holiday, as well. So yeah, it is all that exists in so many ways.
I used to, at the end of an NFL season, it would be, all right, focused in on college hoops through March Madness, great games, big games in February, you know, into early March, and then you got the whole month of March. But I'm having football withdrawal, definitely. I mean, I think this first Sunday without football, I mean, I know we had the week between championship games and the Super Bowl, and then to think, you know, we're still 7 months away from the next real game. I mean, a little bit less than 7 months. Football season is the ultimate. There's just nothing that touches it. It also falls into this rhythm of life for a lot of people, which is the beginning of the school calendar, getting back to work, off of the summer, more scheduled, more routine.
Yeah.
It fits into that routine and the schedule with, you know, understanding Saturdays is college, Sundays is pro, Monday night game. And it's hard without it. I mean, I'm not just talking about doing, you know, content like on a radio show or on a podcast, because we'll always come up with something. But there is there's definitely an interest level in sports that from September through the Super Bowl, the rest of the year, it just can't touch it. Nothing touches it anymore.
You know, we were talking about TV shows before, and like I binge shows the way people do, but I generally like the buildup of weekly shows the way that HBO does it, right? Because it gives you time to think. Like, I mean, for me, the most fun I ever had, not saying that the best show, but the most fun I ever had as a consumer was watching Lost. I got completely into all of the what's happening, what does this mean, what is that, all the conspiracies, whatever. But you had time for the drama to build each week because it was a weekly series. This is the NFL. The other sports you have to binge. You have to, if in order to watch all the Wizards games or the Lakers or whatever, you have to watch a lot of content, and you know, in a compressed time frame. The NFL, you play the one game, the drama builds over the week, whatever it is, good or bad, and then it goes to the next one, and then it keeps going. And I think that as consumers, I just think I like that better, you know, independent of everything else. Now, obviously, in our case, there hasn't been as much drama or hasn't been much interest, relatively speaking, because of how bad this team has been. And that's what's going to make, I think, this season even more interesting because of the fact that there is at least hope in the air again. We'll see. We'll see where it all goes. I imagine you are tired of talking about, have you run out of angles to discuss at this point? I mean, you can always discuss everything, Caleb Williams, the draft, Dan Quinn's staff, whatever, but like, have we reached a point where it's like, okay, now what?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of the discussion about the last month, other than GM and head coach and coordinators, I think the staff hirings for the majority is pretty niche stuff, but the Adam Peters hire and the Dan Quinn hire and that process, and then even the OC and the DC, was really kind of interesting to watch. I think the rest of it, I think people get bored with personally, or not everybody. There's obviously a hardcore, give me every piece of information on every assistant coach, but I don't think that's for the masses in the fan base. I think what will happen between now and the end of April is it may be the most important thing that happens, but without question will be the most anticipated and the most followed thing of the off season. I think the build up to number two overall, the build up to free agency, given how much cap space they have and how many perceived holes on the roster. So I do think, and I'm very much looking forward to the conversations about the next couple of months. And I also think, Ben, and I think you and I have talked about this together on the radio show. I think that these are conversations that people have much more of a feel for and information on, because it's about players that they've watched, you know, over and over and over again. I mean, 9 out of 10 people had no idea who Adam Peters or Ian Cunningham or Alec Hallaby was before the end of December or early January. You know, most people, when it came to the assistant coaches that were being talked about, you know, they knew Ben Johnson, but they didn't even know of Mike McDonald until late in the season when the Ravens were kicking ass. Most people had never heard of Dave Canales. Well, most people would not have. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, I guarantee you, most people could not have named Joe Witt Jr. before he started getting mentioned.
That's why I think the next couple of months, it's a bigger tent. It's many more people involved with, you know, strong opinions and more informed because they've watched. And I think that makes for a better conversation, because I think just the idea, I mean, and I'm not knocking people that did this, but I have this sense that half the people minimum, even who have a job talking about this, that got into the differences between assistant, you know, coach possibilities or assistant GM possibilities, had no more idea than a bluebird, you know, who would make the best candidate for this situation. So now we're getting into the point of year where everybody thinks they're an expert, which is the best for my kind of content, when you can, you know, have people on, including all of us, that I watched Jaden Daniels, I watched Drake May, or Mike Evans is, you know, should be a guy, or Josh, you know, Allen should be a guy we go after, not the quarterback, the pass rusher. I mean, these are games and hours upon hours of investment into having an opinion on these players. It's just different.
Yeah. And by the way, in terms of the draft, like, the quarterbacks always kind of stand out, but like, because fans have watched college football and have seen these guys come through year after year, people will know. I mean, I'm not saying I will until I dig in, where people will know that the safety on Virginia, they like better than the safety from Oklahoma State. And like, can say, and like, whereas like in the NBA at this point, I couldn't even name the 5 people who are going to be on the All-American team, but because it changes out so much.
Yeah. I do think though, that when we get into that conversation that you just said, it's people have opinions, but it's so lax depth. And the reason for that is we don't know anything about these people as people. Number two is we don't know, especially with a new staff, we don't know whether or not they fit into what the new staff is looking for and what we'll be scheming for. We won't know anything for sure until they start playing games, and probably a couple of years worth of games, but it doesn't. At least these are names that people know and have watched.
Speaking of the staff, I don't know if you saw, I don't know if we talked about this when I was on your show on Friday, or if you saw my tweet the other day, but there's a very interesting aspect of this staff that's rare in these parts. It's different than the Schottenheimer era, the Spurrier, Gibbs 2.0, Shanahan, Gruden, Callahan, or not Callahan, Gruden and Rivera. And that is, there's only one person on the staff with the name Quinn. There's no nepotism hires that I see. There's none of that. There's no extra Quinns. There's no extra Peters. There's no extra, you know, Witts or Kingsbury's.
Well, he, in part because he's the youngest coach that we've hired, not Gruden, not Jay. Well, what other Gruden was on the staff?
There was a Deuce Gruden, right? Wasn't he there was a strength coach.
Okay.
I mean, it was John's kid, but it was a family.
I didn't know that. I was gonna say Rivera and Del Rio had sons that were old enough to coach. Obviously Mike had, you know, and Joe had at the time, sons that were young enough to be a part of, or old enough to be a part of it.
I don't even know if Dan Quinn, I'm not even positive. I've talked about my head, to, you know, I don't know the age of, I mean, he's 53. Yeah. He easily could have a 30-year-old or 20-something, but like, I don't even know if he has son. I'm just saying it is, I find that interesting that there's none of that.
Yeah.
I mean, Peter's but only just, has young.
Let me just mention this, though, because it would be totally revisionist for me. It never bothered me. Like, Marty Schottenheimer brought in, you know, his brother.
Yeah, who was a legit coach.
Yeah, legit coach. Mike brought in Kyle, who had made Matt Schaub into like a top 10 quarterback there for a couple of seasons. You know, Ron Rivera basically added Del Rio's son and his son, but as, you know, quality assistant, you know, the entry level intern near positions.
Sure.
None of that ever really bothered me that much.
It doesn't bother me in a certain sense. I mean, like if you own, you know, Sheehan's hardware store and, you know, you want your kid to, you know, possibly take over one day, you're going to bring your kid in, you're going to give him some jobs and you see what happens. And this is some of that, except for the fact that it's not their business. It's basically our business, the consumer's business. I think that's why it bothers them. I don't know if it means anything. I just noting that it is rare that this is a different deal than it was before. The rest of it, I don't know. I remember I see people who were but my favorite comment I saw on Twitter about the staff and like including people who stayed, somebody said that they're really glad they kept Shane Taub, the quality offensive quality control coach. They really like him. It's like I was like, what? Come on.
All right. I think that some of that stuff comes from the not real world of Twitter and X. And, you know, whenever, like, I usually spend time on it about an hour or 2 hours before my radio show every day, because there's usually something there that creates an idea for a segment or some content. But if I spent, like, it's so dumb most of the time. And so ill-informed. Like, how many people are out there in our fan base? Let's just take our little sliver of the, you know, NFL universe that have somehow made themselves in their own minds on Twitter into experts. I bet some of those were the people that said, thank God they kept Shane, Taub?
Yeah.
Thank God they kept him. And then somebody that might be reading them is like, hey, great job keeping Shane Taub. Had no idea. But that's the world we live in now. I mean, I don't know. Some of it's so performative, I guess, on some level.
Well, this is the thing. I always say this about sports, and this is, I'm sure you deal with this more than even I do, but like, you know, if you have a conversation at a dinner party with somebody who's a dentist, right? I presume you're not going to say to him, you know what? I was checking out the recent medical journals and, you know, this new procedure that they're doing to deal with the bicuspids or whatever. You know, I think that's a pretty good way to go. Nobody's saying that. Nobody's meeting a lawyer and going, you know what? I really was impressed with the Supreme Court's decision on, you know, Sheehan versus Levero and how they specified. We're not doing that. But when it comes to sports, all you have to say is, I think the Commanders are going to beat the Cowboys. And like you can make an opinion off of knowing nothing, because it's typically a win or lose.
God. Yeah, but Ben, thank God for that, or we wouldn't have a business. Like so before I got into broadcasting, I've told you this before. I was in four different tech startups, early stage companies, and I can remember thinking, you know, with people that would come in and say no, you know, and try to kind of tell you about your business when they had no idea about your business. And now I'm in a business where I literally comment on the job that actual experts are doing. It's so ridiculous, but they're lucky that there's that much conversation about it and that much interest in it. It's why they have this big platform, why they make so much money, is because they're fans and they're paying fans, and the fans want more and media wants more. Specific to the Shane Taub thing, I think there's just a point that people get to where it's like, okay, you don't have to go that far. Like, we can sit here and we can act like we are just so pissed that they went for a fourth and one instead of, or punted on fourth and one instead of going for it, and have a real strong feeling. That's all, that's been part of sports and rooting for sports since the beginning of time. But now we're into, you know, Shane Taub, the quality assistant, thank God they kept him. I don't know, maybe the person that said it actually knows something about him, but more times than not, they don't.
I mean,
and it's like, you know,
I to that point,
it's okay to say you don't know occasionally.
He is the son of the Kansas City Chiefs special teams coordinator. So I guess possibly somebody views it as, oh, the special teams coordinator is pretty good. Let's hope this apple didn't fall too far from the tree, or who knows.
Yeah.
All right. Before I let you go, because I've kept you too long, although, you know, you like a good long interview. Some actual football. You mentioned free agency. It is starting to be that time where we need to get into that. Franchise tags are open this weekend. I don't think Washington's involved this year. That said, they have a ton of free agents. There are guys that you would put in the, you know, hey, these are starters, the Cam Curls, the Curtis Samuels, the Kendall Fullers. And then there's like the depth guys, the James Smith Williams, the Cornelius Lucas, Jeremy Reeves, guys like that. Whatever it is for you, who's the one or two guys that you're like, look, whether the price is high or whether the price is low, like, you know, whether they're a starter or a guy or a bench guy, who are the couple guys that you're like, look, I really hope that the Commanders find a way to keep these guys?
Oh, so you're talking about their own players.
Yeah.
Their own free agents. I was talking the other day about just the possibility that this group came in and views the roster differently than all of us do off of this 4-13 horrific campaign, because we are a bit influenced by one of the worst seasons in franchise history that we've ever watched. And it's very possible that Dan Quinn and Adam Peters and everybody are like, you got some pieces here. You know, they just need to be coached better. They need to be in an environment that has just better vibe. I mean, you had a lame duck head coach basically, and the season got away from everybody, but you know what? Jamin Davis has some talent, or Cam Curl, actually, the year that you guys saw in 2022 was not, you know, an aberration. This guy can play, and Forrest, before he got hurt, he can play. Quan Martin, I mean, this is exactly the kind of guy that plays for Dan Quinn and that Adam Peters looked for in San Francisco. I guess my point being, I bet you there are more players that they like than at the end of the season most fans would say are guys that have to come back. First of all, you can't replace a whole roster, so a lot of these guys are coming back. But in terms of their free agents and bringing somebody back, I don't know that there's anybody that has to come back if there are better options in the draft. Like, I was thinking about Curtis Samuel and how he would fit into a Cliff Kingsbury system, but I bet you that there are a half dozen guys from rounds 3 through 5 that they'll find that are, you know, on a rookie, you know, mid-round pick pay scale that are dynamic in space and can be used as a receiver, runner, because it's the way college football's played. And it seems like every year there's somebody like that, like 3 or 4 of those guys coming into the league. I don't know. Do you have somebody that you think is absolute must re-sign? Jacoby Brissett?
Well, I mean, he's an interesting one, because I think whether you pursued him or someone like that would potentially say a lot about what their plans are. Because that's the thing, is like, everybody's acting, and I'll answer the question, but like, everybody's acting like, you know, anybody who's hearing a report that suggests that the Commanders want to do X, Y, or Z, whether it's with Caleb Williams or anything else, you should ignore that person for the rest of your life. There's no chance that they have a plan yet. They just got here together 10 seconds ago. They got to figure out who's on the roster. Also, we don't even know definitively. Are they trying to win this year, or are they like willing to sort of take the slower path? I know the NFL, you can turn around quickly, but you know, who's to say? People point to the Houston Texans because of what they did last year, getting CJ Stroud and then making the playoffs. But they were building for several years before that. They added other pieces and made changes. With, you know, Nick Caserio had been there for a few years. Is, you know, we don't even know what their plans are. So anyway, but in terms of the idea of who I'd bring back, I guess I don't have anybody specifically that they have to. I think for me, it's more of the depth guys, though, than it is the starters. Like, I think Cornelius Lucas has been a very valuable player. And if you're going to draft a rookie tackle to replace Charles Leno, should he get salary cap cut, I think having a guy like Lucas around would be similar to having a guy like Brissett around, right? You have somebody to go should that player not be ready, or you don't want to rush him. I think that James Smith Williams, you know, he was the starting defensive end on a defense that was a top 10 defense. Now, he wasn't the driving force, obviously, but he did his job, thus allowing those other Sweat, Allen, and Payne to do their jobs. And right now they have, I don't know, who is their defensive ends as, you know, the season starts today? KJ Henry? I mean, looks interesting. Yeah, I mean, but
Henry, Jones Jr. are the ones that are under contract.
Right. So, like,
Two Hill's a free agent, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, Albada, unfortunately, is hurt, but also a free agent. So, yeah, I mean, I think guys like that. Then, like, Jeremy Reeves, you know, he's obviously just a very popular figure for the fans, for the locker room. Really, you know, good on special teams.
They'll love Hudson.
He was the one guy when in hearing how Dan Quinn and Joe Witt Jr. described, and maybe we talked about this, I think we did actually, but how they described the type of defense they want, and, you know, whatever. They want everybody to hit hard and be aggressive. But Hudson was the one guy. He was like fifth in the team in tackles and only started the last eight games.
Right.
He was definitely around there. So, yeah, I don't know. I think Cam Curl is going to be an incredibly fascinating topic. Obviously, the fans here think he's great. I've seen a lot of the lists who think, you know, the rankings of free agents have him somewhere in the top 50 or so. I'm going to talk to Randy Muir this week on the podcast, so don't steal him from me. He's, you know, a former NFL GM who works for The Athletic now. He just put out today his top 150 list. You know where Cam Curl ranks?
Where?
I have no idea. He's not on the list. And I checked. Yeah. It's not an oversight. Top 150. Now, obviously, that seems extreme, but he is everybody else who's doing these lists, like you said before, or like you and me, and he's a former GM, and he didn't put him on the list. I'm going to ask him why that's the case. But I think, like, the main guys, like him and Samuel and Fuller, if you can keep for the right price, I guess. But, like, I think there's, for where this team is, I think you probably have to let all those guys go.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. Like, there's no expansion draft here. So there are going to be a lot of players that were on the roster last year that are going to be on the roster this year. And a lot of them are going to start, too. But they do have an opportunity that you don't have very often, which is top cap space, a lot of free agents that actually fill some of the perceived holes. I would definitely say pass rusher in particular. With guys like Burns and Allen and Danielle Hunter, et cetera. And then, you know, we got to understand what they're going to do scheme-wise and the kinds of the big tell, not even a tell, they told us. And that is, we're looking for the kinds of players that you see play in San Francisco specifically. The guys that don't get tackled very easy, like Deebo Samuel and George Kittle and Christian McCaffrey, like, they're looking for tough physical finishing competitors. So that should be a guide when we get into free agency in the draft for sure.
Yeah. By the way, I didn't mention earlier, you said like the new staff might see more on the roster than we saw after the 4-13 year. And I think a lot of us were high on the roster, at least in the, relative to what we had seen here before, and then it just fell apart. I swear I think this is true, but I'm looking online and I can't find it. I thought I saw that ESPN did a, you know, looking ahead to 2024, like who's going to, you know, what teams are going to go up or go down or breakout players. And I swear I thought I saw that Lewis Riddick had his breakout player was going to be Forbes.
Mike Tannenbaum.
Okay.
Emmanuel Forbes.
Yeah. Okay. And like, that's the type of guy that I'm like, That's partly why I think like you can maybe let Cam Curl go, because between Forbes, Quan Martin, Derek Forrest, Percy Butler, St. Juice, even, can this staff get more out of them than we saw the last staff do? And if they think they can, that's what I'm talking about.
I think they'll look at some of these players that just a year ago we thought were pretty good, and they're going to look at the circumstance of the season. They're going to look at the coaching, the changes in coaching during the year, and I think they're going to think more highly of, like, you know, a Forbes or even a, you know, a Curl or, I just think that there will be, you know, a Lucas, like you said, like Wiley and Gates fit kind of that competitive thing that they want, but Gates was pretty bad. The advance numbers on Wiley weren't the worst, so he's under contract. I'm curious as to what they'll think of him.
Well, I think Wiley and Gates are both...
They'll love Cosme.
Yeah, I think Wiley and Gates are probably both likely to stay just looking at the cap numbers. There's just, they don't get much relief by releasing them, and you know, they have to have somebody. And Wiley, like, you know, if Wiley was the weakest link on the Super Bowl team, right? It's not like you can't win with him. It's just that in the scenario they were in last year, they just didn't have any strength anywhere. The Chiefs had multiple Pro Bowlers on that line. Washington obviously did not. All right. Look, I could keep talking all day. You've got things to do. Obviously,
right. I love doing this with you.
Do I even, I mean, do I, like, I say this, and I'm saying this at the end, but I say this sincerely. I have way more people who know me because of my appearances on your show than anything I do. When I went to that 980 and 106.7 event that you guys all did, and I sat in the, I was in the crowd watching, and I at one point moved over to like an aisle just to sort of stand, and people kept coming up to me and saying, "Hey, you know, love it when you go on with Kevin, this, that, and the other." So I don't think I even have to promote the fact that you have a radio show and a podcast. Like, everybody knows. I mean,
oh, stop it.
I'm serious.
That was a fun night, and there were, you know, a lot of 980 fans there, which was awesome. That was, we hadn't done that in so long, which was great. Well,
I enjoyed watching that to see which of you spoke up the most and which of you kind of retreated and just said, you know what, I'm going to let the louder voices talk, because in a room of 12 dudes who all talk and have loud voices. Yeah,
got a little sideways there at times. God, I'm looking. Cam Curls is not, you're right. He's not anywhere on the top 150 for Randy Mueller.
Yeah.
God, I, you know what? I may get him on the show this week.
No.
He's actually a great guest. I mean, I've had him on, like you've had him on. He works at The Athletic with you, but he is a good guest.
No, I generally like his thoughts. And I'm not, I'm just curious to see, because like I have wondered this whole time, where are we at? Like, how do I say this? Like, I like, for example, like D Hall. I like D Hall, the person. Oh, he's always been cool with me. And he was obviously a really good player here. But to the degree that he was like godded up at times because there was nothing else here, that it became like, wow, D'Angelo Hall's great. I'm like, well, okay, he's good, but he's not great. I kind of think the same thing with the roster, because Cam Curl was on a team that was just largely terrible players. And then he was a seventh round pick and all that. Like, it was, people acted like he was all that. You know, he basically generated almost no turnovers the last 3 years, which is a huge problem.
Look, I keep, and I've been saying since they drafted him, I've been the biggest Daron Payne fan. And even when he was, you know, inconsistent, I'm like, no, but his ceiling is so high. When he has those moments, like John Allen's not capable of producing some of those moments if they can get the best out of him. And then they did. And like, I don't want to see them move on from these two tackles. Cause I mean, we didn't see a Chris Jones like performance at any point this season from either one of them, but like, I think Payne's capable of that. Can Quinn get that out of Payne consistently? Maybe. And he's under contract. Like, there are some guys next year I'm looking forward to seeing if we end up looking back and saying, well, you know, the reason they were great this year is because they actually had some really solid coaching and scheming and the whole thing. And not to mention all the other shit that was going on at the same time.
For
5 years.
I said before, we have no real idea what the organization's plan is in terms of how quickly they want to try to turn this thing around. I think the John Allen situation is sort of the, I don't know if canary in the coal mine is the right analogy, but like, he's going to want a new deal. If they give him one, they're giving it to a guy who's, you know, getting closer to 30, who's now played a bunch of years, who was, you know, a bit hurt last year, I guess. Do they, and if they don't think this team is ready to go, especially with like a rookie quarterback, why are you paying a guy all that money for the next couple of years when you're not ready to contend? You'd be better off trading him, right? Getting picks and then going that way. On the other hand, he's obviously a very good player. That's the strength of your defense. So if you want to, you know, get this thing going, that's, why would you break that up? I do think so. Then you therefore would probably have to pay him. I mean, he's under contract, but I think that's going to be a discussion. So I think that's going to be a very interesting thing to look at. All right. You can get more of Kevin. I don't want to put this up probably tonight, but you can get more of Kevin, obviously, Monday to Friday, 10 to 1 on the Team 980. And of course, the great Kevin Sheehan Show podcast, which is, it is one of the highest rated podcasts in the country. Forget local. Like, it's basically like Joe Rogan, Bill Simmons, and Kevin Sheehan. I'm not even exaggerating too much.
Thank you. Now that is a great pitch. I'm going to hire you to be my publicist because you lie well.
Hey, man. Got to do what you got to do. My guy, I appreciate it. Are we talking tomorrow?
Yeah. What's tomorrow? Tuesday? Radio? Maybe. Maybe not. I'll let you know.
Wow. Maybe not. All right.
Denton keeps sending me all these guests that are booked for tomorrow, and I had booked a bunch of guests. We are not communicating well right now, so I got to get in touch with them. I'll let you know.
All right. Well, you guys work that out. We need you guys on the same page here going down the stretch.
He's the best. All right. Thanks for having me as always.
Yeah, man.
All right. See you, man.
All right. Big thanks to Kevin Sheehan for his time. Appreciate everyone here checking out my podcast as well as my appearances on with Kevin Sheehan on the radio and his podcast. Reminder, next week is Combine Week, so we'll get more into that this week before I head out to Indy for sure. But that's it for now. Ben Standick signing off. Until next time, see ya.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.